Welcome to this week's Foxcast. I'm Sonny Fox, and this week is a treat because in the studio with me this time is the one and only Stephen Wright.
Thank you very much.
Ah, see, even there he took a breath and pondered the response. I noticed.
I thought at first it was a trick question.
Well, it was, but you blew it. Your special is called The Leaves Blow Away. We'll be talking about that.
Okay.
Yeah, lots of things. I got a chance to see it, and the hat you're wearing is marvelous.
Oh, thank you very much.
You got one of those pork pie Kevin Federline, the Bowery Boys hats on.
Yeah, I saw a band, and a bunch of the people in the band were wearing those hats, and I thought, I should get one of those hats. So I did. That was about 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah? Well, I was going to say, is it for style, or is it because of the hairline? Or?
It's hairline, it's change of pace, it's style. Yeah. Covers many subjects, including my head.
In fact, the last time I saw one of those was in Rocky. Balboa wore one. The original,
oh, yeah?
In the original Rocky movie. Don't you remember that?
Oh, wait. I think I do remember in that movie, yeah.
Right, he was wearing the pork pie hat. Stephen Wright is from Boston, actually a little outside of Boston, right?
Yeah, Burlington, 20 miles outside.
You came up with a bunch of guys from Boston. Dennis Leary, who else?
Oh, Bobcat Goldthwaite, Paula Poundstone, Mario Cantone.
Dennis Leary.
Yeah, he said him. Dennis Leary.
I missed that.
And, can't remember right now. It's Kevin Meaney.
Boston's always been
a lot of people.
Boston's been a great. It's always had a lot of comedy clubs and a lot of venues to work out of. But you started at I forgot the name of it. Den Hall. What was the name of the place?
It was the Comedy Connection. There were two clubs: the Comedy Connection and then the Ding Ho Comedy Club. Right. Was in Cambridge. We all used to play at both of them.
And you were you used to watch comics when you were a kid on the Tonight Show.
Oh yeah, I was watching the Tonight Show all the time. I loved watching Johnny. I thought he was amazing, and I loved the guests he had on. And it was like in the late mid '70s, no, early '70s, like David Brenner and Carlin and Robert Klein and people like that. I just loved it. I thought it was amazing to see those comedians.
Did you actually think you'd be on TV one day?
I fantasized about it, but I didn't know if it would really happen. But from seeing those guys, that's how it got in my head that I would like to do that if I could. There was also a radio show in Boston. The guy played two entire comedy albums every Sunday night. And I had a little radio in bed with me. I was like 14, 15 years old, and I heard like everything that was recorded. It was amazing. 2001 Man, you know, Mel Brooks and David Fry, the Impressionist, and the Woody Allen albums. And I think I was studying comedy without knowing I was, because I just had such an interest.
I used to produce a show called The Comedy Hour. It was back in the late 70s. I don't know if it ran in Boston, though. It was in about 100 cities. And we would feature stand-up cuts. And one of the guys you remind me of, I don't know if you're old enough to remember this guy, Jackie Vernon.
Oh, yeah. I know him from, he was on Mike Douglas all the time.
Yeah, he has a very dry, he was the closest thing that I can think of to you back in those days. You know?
Yeah, he used to say, when my father died, we buried him because he would have wanted it that way.
My favorite line of his was, he goes, I go to the beach during the wintertime. Less competition. He goes, I put my toe in the sand. I say something like, I must have lost my Congressional Medal of Honor here somewhere. You know? He was so dry, and he reminds you of you.
When I was a little kid, I wish the first words I ever said was the word quote, so right before I died, it could say unquote. Lots of my friends have babies, but I don't have any babies, but I have lots of friends. Babies don't have any friends. They all have those baby monitors so they can hear the baby from the other room, which I consider a form of wiretapping. Someday it's gonna be a really smart baby that makes a fake recording of some fake baby noises. Gonna crawl out the window and go to Italy. I need one of those baby monitors from my subconscious to my consciousness so I can know what the hell I'm really thinking about. Sometimes I talk to myself fluently in languages I'm unfamiliar with. Just to screw with my subconscious. It's a good thing a lot of people speak foreign languages, otherwise those people would have no one to talk to. When I was in first grade, the teacher told us that the president was married to the first lady, and all I could think of was, wow, I wonder if she ever saw any dinosaurs. She told us about Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapel, and that day I went home, I was laying at the top of my bunk bed looking at the ceiling, and I'm thinking, why not? My brother's pushing the bed around. Give me more aqua. I did Jesus and Santa Claus on a seesaw. I had Jesus on the low end, even though he weighed less. Because he's Jesus. Jesus pissed off a lot of people, you know. Will you stop turning the water into wine? I'm trying to take a shower. What did Jesus ever do for Santa Claus on his birthday? Don't think about it. It doesn't mean anything.
Stephen Wright is our guest.
I appreciate it.
You mentioned watching TV when you were a kid, watching Carson and stuff, but did you ever think you'd end up on television? You were on Mad About You. How many years were you on that show?
Oh, I did about... I only did about 5 episodes.
Oh, did you? I thought you were on
August. No, it was like two different seasons. My dream, though, my fantasy was to go on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Well, tell us about the first time that happened. Give us the inside story.
I Peter LaSalle saw me. He's the producer. He saw me at the Ding Ho Comedy Club in Cambridge. Some guy wrote an article about that club, and it was in the L.A. Times, because it was such a weird place. It was half a Chinese restaurant, half a comedy club.
And you got one from Column B and a joke from Column A.
So he knew about that place, and he came to Boston to look at colleges. His kids were getting out of high school, and they were going to go to college. So in the summer of 82, he went to Boston. And then he was going to go down to New York and look at schools. And so he went in that club, and he told us he was coming in advance. And so about 10 of us performed for about 10 minutes each. And then just from him seeing me a few weeks later, the Tonight Show called me up. They wanted me to go on. It was like a complete... It was very amazing. It was a very lucky break, very surreal break.
You must have freaked.
I freaked. It was in the afternoon, and they called me. It was only like a 10-minute conversation. I hung the phone up, and I called my friends and family, and no one was home. So it was like this almost partial hallucination, except it was happening. I guess I was hallucinating in my reaction. It was weird. And then I went on and just...
Wait, did you run down the street and grab a stranger? You had to tell somebody?
No, I just sat on the couch and... just thought, oh, man, that's just amazing. It was just, I just pondered it, you know. Well, no, the fact I didn't reach anyone made it weirder.
Right. Like it was possible that you were going to wake up or something.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable.
He sat there thinking, I'm going to get laid so many times. The Tonight Show. So anyway, when you went out there, I mean, that must have been a hell of a plane ride.
Oh, it was just, I mean, they wanted me to go on about 3 weeks after that phone call, and then I'm there, and I can't believe I'm in that building, and the year before I was out in L.A. with my girlfriend, and we were going to a wedding, and she said, why don't we go in the Tonight Show and watch the Tonight Show, and I said to her, no, I think that'll jinx me. I don't want to ever go in there unless I get to be on the show. And then so like a year later it happened. So I was in the makeup room. They put makeup on, which was a whole other thing. I had never had makeup on.
Really?
And I'm just sitting there in the chair, and I look like, I just look like regular, you know, I didn't have a tan or anything. And about 9 minutes later, I looked like a complete health freak, like outside, like California guy with sparkly eyes. And they did everything, mascara and everything. And as I sat there, I thought, my God, the women, they've been doing this for years. I was fascinated by the change. Right. And then Johnny came in and he started talking to me in the dress, in the makeup room, and he could have been saying, we're gonna axe murder you and we're gonna bury your body in 9 different states. And I would have just said, yes, I understand, I was speechless. Right. There he was. He was standing there. It was amazing.
Wow. Now, I know from talking to other comedians that they're very particular about your material, so when before you go on, they go over it, right?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
They must have, when they read your material, they must have, what did they say? I mean, it wasn't the normal David Brenner stuff.
Well,
Did they say, this is funny, or what?
Peter saw me in the club, and he thought it was funny, and he was the co-producer, so they wanted a tape. They wanted to show a tape of it to Freddie DeCordover before I went on.
Right.
And so I mailed them a tape, but the only tape I had was one tape from another comedy club, and I didn't even have shoes on. I had flip-flops and jeans, and they saw the tape, and they liked the material, but I remember the Jim McCauley, the talent coordinator, saying, you're going to have to wear better clothes, like dress like you're going to a wedding reception or something. I mean, I wasn't going to wear flip-flops on the show, but that's the tape they got. But they knew the material and they liked it, and that was amazing.
Wow! And there you were on the Tonight Show.
I mean, I was so nervous that I kind of went numb.
Really?
Before I walked out.
Now, did he invite you over to the couch, or did he give you the nod the first time?
No, he did. He invited me over. They told me when it's over, look over at him, and then put the mic back in the mic stand, and then leave through the curtain. And I was done, and I looked over, and he was motioning for me to go over. And you can see on the tape, it's funny, because I take like a half a step, and then I stop, and then I continue on, because I'm not sure what's happening.
Right, you want to make a mistake.
During the 5 minutes I did, when the audience started laughing, I thought, wow, I'm just going to try to do this like I'm playing in the comedy club. I'll just play to these 500 people and kind of ignore that it's on TV.
Right.
And then I heard Johnny laughing, and that was just, you know, like I said, watching him since I was 14, to hear him laughing at something I thought of was an incredible rush. It was amazing.
Wow. You didn't get aroused or anything on television, did you?
No, I didn't.
You sound disappointed.
No one's ever asked me that question. Imagine how weird phones would look if your mouth was nowhere near your ears. Imagine Oshkosh straitjackets for little insane children. Oh, stay away from Jimmy. I met this woman and I really liked her. As soon as I met her, all I could think of, I was wondering if there was such thing as the opposite of restraining order. I liked her because she wasn't normal. She liked to dance really fast to very slow music, which I found very erotic due to a head injury as a small boy. I was playing jacks way too fast. Her eyes were a little bit too close together, like the headlights on a Jeep. I used to call her AC, almost Cyclops. In her spare time, she liked to waste time. She was a mail-order bridesmaid. She would drink so much, she would slur her pauses. She lived in a beautiful house, had cathedral floors. You walk in, you just fall right down into the middle. We went out for about 6 months. Then she left. She went back to school in Seattle. She was studying forensic astronomy. She wrote me this beautiful letter, and I read it in the bottom. I crossed her name off, and I wrote my own name, and I sent it back to her. And I never heard from her ever again. Apparently, she didn't like what she wrote. My nephew has HD ADD. High definition attention deficit disorder. He can barely pay attention, but when he does, it's unbelievably clear. I saw an advertisement for some invisible fences. Thought that'll be perfect for my invisible dogs. I live in Massachusetts. I didn't shovel a driveway once this past winter since I bought the flamethrower. You know, the earth is bipolar. So I've been emailing my answering machine, which has been sending faxes to my cellular subconscious, which has call waiting, so in case I'm thinking about something else, I can get back to myself later. It's out of control now, don't you think? I heard soon they're going to have digital numbers. My dog has a website. All it is naked cats.
Stephen Wright is our guest in our studio, and it's really nice. He's got a special on. You got to see this. Leaves Blow Away is the name of the Comedy Central special. Where did the title come from?
Well, there was a joke in my act that it had that sentence in it, and when I was working with the editor on the show, she kept asking me what was the name of the show going to be, and I said I have no idea, and she said, "Why don't she just said that sentence from that one joke?" She was kind of kidding, like maybe that could be the name of it, and I laughed. I said, "Yeah, that would be weird if that was the name of it," and then that just stuck in my head for a few weeks, and then I thought I will use that as the name. But I had the joke taken out of the show, so...
I was going to say, I don't remember seeing it.
There's no reference to it in the show at all. Well, it just simply sounded like a title. So, and I didn't really know, but notice I was going to... that it was going to cause this curiosity, because people ask me about it, and it sounds weird now when I have to say it has no... It had meaning, but the meaning was removed.
Well, rock groups have done that for years. What the hell? You know. Well, it actually does open with you walking through a very cold, wintry scene, so I guess that sort of ties.
I did it in Toronto. The last one I did a long time ago was in Toronto, too, and I did it in Toronto because for some reason the Canadian people laugh a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, they're more educated up there. They're smarter. They are,
I don't know what, I don't know why it is. It might have to do with the exchange rate.
Yeah, you get more joke per laugh up there.
Yeah, per laugh.
Do you like Canada, by the way? I mean, personally?
Yeah, I like it. I kind of feel bad for the people there because they're so focused on the United States that it's just... It's just weird how focused that culture is on what's happening here. I think they should just do what they're doing and forget about what we're doing.
Yeah, but they can sit around and talk about us all day and not have to put up with the bullshit that we do by living
That's
here.
That's true. You know? I like going there, though, because there's a lot of foreign movies there, meaning they're United States movies. I used to tease my friend Mike was from Toronto, and I used to go up there with him, and I said, "Mike, there's so many foreign movies here. I can't believe it." Because they're all made in the United States.
But you know something, more and more United States movies are being made in Canada because of the taxes and everything.
You know? Oh, yeah, that's true now. Yeah.
We're going to talk about movies, in fact, because you're an Academy Award winner. when we come back. Stephen Wright's our guest.
So last night as I was downloading pornographic bootleg SpongeBob's sent to me from a hairdresser I know in Argentina, I noticed that it had no milk for tomorrow's coffee, so looked at the car keys, which had been strategically placed under the short leg of the kitchen table so the soup wouldn't spill, and I had to make a decision. Do I walk to the store or do I drive and spill the soup? After a half an hour on my hands and knees, I delicately removed the car keys from under the table, and the soup didn't spill, which pissed me off so much that I whipped it against the wall. Then I tried to wash it off with my machine gun squirt gun, which was full of another kind of soup, and I kind of liked the pattern I made, so I took photographs of it, intending to do paintings of the photographs, which I would sell back to myself later, since I am a private collector. Then I get outside and get in my car and I'm driving out to the store. My mind is skipping around and wondering how my life would have been different had I been born one day earlier. Then I'm thinking maybe it wouldn't have been different other than I would have asked that question yesterday. So I go in the store and no one's behind the register, and I'm thinking I should go behind the register so when people come in they can ask me questions and I can say, what do I look like when I work here? Then I went to the back of the store where they keep the milk, and out of the corner of my eye I saw the 17-year-old girl come out of the back room and go behind the register, and I'm wondering what was she doing in the back room. And then I tried to distract myself from my own imagination. I looked at a can of peas and I started counting the peas that were on the label of the can, 44, 45, 46. I'm wondering if they had a meeting on how many peas should be on the label of the can. 47 is too many, 45 is not enough. All in favor of 46? Okay, yes, 46. Then I took the milk and I went up to the register and I said, hi, how are you? And she said, will that be all? And I said, no, I want to buy this. And I tried to read her mind, but I couldn't because I can barely read my own mind. Then I was imagining me and her running naked across Fenway Park, holding hands in the crowd, cheering, go, go, go. Then I said to her, do you like baseball? And she said, what? And I said, do you sell lighter fluid by the case? And she got all nervous, so then I left. Then I'm driving around, I'm thinking, all right, I'm still alive. Now what am I gonna do? So I figure I go down and rent a movie. So I go down to the video store and I can't remember the title of the movie I want. So I'm describing the movie to the guy. I said, yeah, you know, it's that black and white movie. It's on color film. I think it stars Nicolas Cage and Haley Mills. It's that movie where the country loses the war because they accidentally made the submarines out of styrofoam and they won't go under the water. The guy's just blankly looking at me. As I'm saying this to him, I'm realizing this is not a movie I saw. This is a dream I had. I'm thinking, my God, I'm trying to rent one of my own dreams. Which would be pretty cool, actually. Then the guy says to me, that's not a movie you saw, that's a dream you had. And I said, how do you know? And he said, because you were in here last week trying to rent the same thing. And I said, all right, let me know when you get it in. Next week, I'm going to have an MRI to find out whether or not I have claustrophobia. In school, they told me practice makes perfect, and they told me nobody's perfect, so then I stopped practicing. Here's some of my answers to some everyday questions. Excuse me, sir, do you know what time it is? No, I'm not from around here. Excuse me, do you know where the train station is? Probably near the tracks. Sometimes when I'm over someone's house and no one's in the kitchen, I like to write things on that to-do list they have on the refrigerator. Memorize distances to all other planets. Adopt baby, then sell on black market. You ever notice when a house burns down, the only thing left standing is the fireplace and the chimney? How's that for evidence?
Stephen Wright is here. You're a big Klein fan, eh?
Yeah, from seeing him on The Tonight Show, amazing, really amazing. In fact, he was the first comedian that I ever saw live.
Really?
I think I was in college in 75, and I was in a car, and the ad came on the radio. He was going to play Past Seams, a little club in Harvard Square. It used to have music, mostly music. And I heard he was going to be there, and I went down there, and I watched him, and it was incredible. What stunned me was, from only seeing comedians on TV, we'd see him do like 5 minutes. It was weird. He passed 5 minutes, then he passed 20 minutes, then it's 40, 45 minutes, and I'm thinking, how can he keep going? I can't be funny enough to keep going, but he just did. It blew me away.
He's a great writer.
He's still one of my favorite guys.
I did a special with him about 6 months ago, and it was one of the few times I felt, you know, a little uncomfortable at first because I was such a big fan of his. Stephen Wright is also a movie star as well as a TV personality and a stand-up comic, a great writer, an author, a musician. But I want to save the music part because that's special to me. I'm a bass player myself. But you're in a lot of films. And if you don't know already, he was in Desperately Seeking Susan with Madonna. He's in Reservoir Dogs. Got the chance to work with Tarantino.
Yeah.
And So I Married an Axe Murderer with Mike Myers. Natural Born Killers. Of course, a lot of times, in fact, Ben, who was engineering our session in Washington, somebody said, who's the Stephen Wright? He goes, the guy on the couch in Half Man.
Oh, yeah.
Are you known to a lot of people as the guy on the couch?
Yeah, like people who are about like from 18 to about 25 right. Know me as the guy on the couch. In fact, I've been, they don't even know I do stand up. And it's like, one reason I wanted to do this special was because the people who are in college now, they were only 5 when I did the last one. So I wanted to try to reach a whole other audience, have it for people who already know me and also. But one thing that I'm wondering is going to happen if some of these young kids are going to say, hey, look, that's the guy on the couch doing stand-up. I didn't know he did that.
Sure they will.
He got good quick.
By the way, you weren't even credited in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, your name was on the thing when it rolled.
Yeah, we did that on purpose.
What?
I don't remember why.
Legal reasons, right?
We thought it would be weird.
Right. Nah, tell the truth. This piece of shit came out and it wouldn't even open. You didn't want to be associated.
No. Right. We thought it was a weird thing.
By the way, you...
I love that movie. That movie's hilarious.
Did you do any research for it?
I did some unintentional research as a college student.
Right. The only movie where you get residual effects by being... But anyway, you've been in a lot of movies, but the one, and I'm ashamed, I have time to see it because I didn't see it the first time around. You want to...
Out of Africa?
No...
That's right. I was not in that. That's right. I get the ones I've seen mixed up with the ones I've been in.
He played the water buffalo. No, The Appointments of Dennis Jennings. You won an Oscar for that. You wrote that. You appeared in it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to go through the whole thing, but I want to get to the meat of the subject. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I thought, because that was back in 88, did you have or did you not have an urge to do another film?
I did, but I didn't do one for like 10 years. I did another short called One Soldier about a guy right after the Civil War obsessed with existentialist questions about being alive.
Really?
Yeah, it's black and white, and I was the guy it went on Independent Film Channel. I don't know why I didn't do more after the Dennis Jennings. I just kind of went back and focused on stand-up. But I do want to do more film stuff because the stand-up is such a narrow window of create. You have to create within this window where the people laugh out loud at every few sentences. And I think of a lot of other stuff that won't fit in that window, so right. I'd like to do both.
Now, Stephen won an Oscar for The Appointments of Dennis Jennings back in '88, if you didn't know that, if you're one of his new fans. But being nominated is one thing, winning is another. But tell us, you said you almost shit your pants when The Tonight Show called, so what happened when somebody calls you and tells you you were nominated?
Oh, the total surrealism, the whole thing. I went to HBO with my friend Mike Armstrong and to see if they'd be interested in doing a film. And they said, yes, we would, a 30-minute film. So then me and Mike had, well, now what are we going to do? Now they want to do it. Now what are we going to do? And I went to...
You came up with the idea before the plot or anything?
We had gone to college together, to Emerson College, and we were always joking about psychiatrists for some reason. So since we'd made so many comments about them, we thought we would make it about that. So we made a movie about a guy who kills his own psychiatrist. And Rowan Atkinson was the psychiatrist who was just an amazing actor.
He must have been great to work with.
Really funny. Because he did so much with his face. That face is incredible.
Well, let's remind the people listening, he's the guy that played Bean.
Yeah, and then the Black Adder.
Right.
And just what an amazing face. So we made it, and we handed it in to HBO, and they said, "Oh, we really like this. We think we should play it in some movie theaters," and before we put it on TV. So we said, "Okay, that sounds good." So they did, and then because it was on a screen in LA, it could be in the category of not, you know, it could be qualified for an Academy Award. And then the next thing you know, it was nominated. So I get this phone call in New York. I lived in New York. And it's nominated. Oh, my God, you're kidding me. I mean, we didn't even make it for the movies. We made it to go on HBO.
Right.
At the time, I was taking a creative writing class at the New School in New York, and I remember I had to miss the next class because I had to go to the Academy Awards, which was hilarious to me. So we went out there, and we were nominated, and it won. It was like throwing a dart. The show was like a dart, and we were going to throw it onto HBO, and a big gust of wind took it and blew it 50 wow. miles to the right, and it stuck into the bullseye of another thing.
Wow.
And it won. And when I went up with the director, Dean Parisot, and I remember I said, this is for the short film category, and we're really glad now that we cut out the other 60 minutes.
Did you get a goodie bag and all that when you at the Oscars?
I remember I had the Oscar. I had it in a plastic bag, like a kitchen trash bag. I had it wrapped in that so nothing would happen to it, and I had it in my carry-on luggage. And I was going back to L.A., back to New York the next day, and the guy made me open the luggage because apparently on the screen there's this thing showing up. And he took it out of the bag, and he just held it, and he looked at it, and he looked at me, and he didn't say anything. He just put it back in and put it in, and then I left. And I know, I mean, I wasn't a big movie star, so his mind must have been going,
"Where'd he steal
hell?
This?
What is this?" He knew it was like the night before. What is happening?
Amazing. Does everybody that goes up to get the Oscar worry about tripping on the stairs?
I don't know.
Did you think about that at all when you went up there?
No, I didn't.
Really?
I didn't think about that.
Well, see, that's just my phobia, I guess. Stephen Wright is our guest, and congratulations again for the Oscar. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Wow.
I have a half twin. I also have a Siamese stepson. A friend of mine is on the Ouija board of directors. My doctor told me I shouldn't work out anymore until I'm in better shape. I said, "All right, don't send me a bill until I pay you." I was in third grade when they told me there was a skeleton inside of me, and it freaked me out. From then on, every Halloween, I went door to door naked. Don't think of the skin. Don't think of the skin. One of my grandfathers died when he was a little boy. Lately, I've been trying to feel healthier, so I've been eating a lot of vitamins, but I don't know. How many vitamins do you have to eat before you feel full? One good thing about it, though, the color of my urine is amazing. It's like going to a laser show. I go in there, I shut the lights off, I put Pink Floyd on. So I called up the airline to make a reservation. They said, how many will be traveling? I said, how do I know? It's your plane. I bought one walkie-talkie. I didn't want anyone to hear what I was saying. I'm addicted to placebos. I could quit, but it wouldn't matter. I'm also part of the Jehovah's Witness Protection Program. I have to go door to door and tell everybody I'm somebody else.
Stephen Wright is at our studio. Stephen, first of all, thanks again for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Now, we talked about your movie career. Well, we've touched on it lightly last break, but I didn't know until I was busily doing a little research on you today for the interview that you're an accomplished musician. And I'm sorry to say that I didn't know that. I was listening to your songs.
On the website, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one You Are Gone is excellent.
Oh, thank you.
The beginning sounded a little like America, a horse of no name, the rhythm pattern.
Oh.
And here he is singing, playing harmonica and the guitar. I was freaked out.
Yeah, now, people don't know I do that.
Did the guitar or music come into your life before comedy?
Yeah, it did. I started playing the guitar when I was about 20. And I started comedy at 23. This is a song I wrote when I was 3. Oh, I think the kitten's trying to kill me. I better kill him first. Good thing mommy's sleeping. Where are the big scissors? Here, kitty, here, kitty, here, kitty. We're gonna play a different funny kind of game. Nothing's ever gonna be the same. I've always just loved fooling around with the guitar. I mean, it's just, it's, the thing about it is, it's, you just pick the thing up, and as soon as you start fooling with it, it's happening right then. You know, like other creative things take so many steps before it actually happens.
Right.
And it's very relaxing. I mean, you said you play the bass?
Yeah.
Isn't it just fun thing to do?
I remember back in, years ago, I lived in Michigan. We got our first band together. Have you played with other people in public?
No, I haven't.
Well, the biggest rush for me was after plunking around the guitar in the living room for months, mm-hmm. to be in a room with somebody else on drums and bass and guitar, and all of a sudden 1, 2, 3, 4, and the four of you make music. That's such a rush. I mean, you must have felt that way when you went to the studio. Who's the guy that does guitar with you?
Well, he's my friend Mark Werthner. I met him because he was the cinematographer on the movie I did, One Soldier. And then when he would come over to my house when we were going to talk about the movie or something, I had a guitar, and he would pick the guitar up, and he could play it like 15 times better than me. Yeah. So then that's how we started making songs.
Now, these
songs. I would like to do that, what you said, with a band. I would like to do that sometime.
Oh, it's a rush. It really is, yeah. Because it's like group sex, sort of, without the diseases and stuff.
I think it goes up exponentially. Like since there's more people, it's not like three times is better. It's like 16 times better than alone.
Well, yes. But with orchestra, then it's, you know, you lose the feeling. No, I was going to say, you got to get together with Stephen...
Lynch?
No. The author. What? Stephen King.
Stephen King?
Stephen King and Dave Barry and the guys. They got
They have a band, right?
They have a weekend band.
Author something?
Yeah, for therapeutic reasons. You'd fit right in. They're all bizarre people. I mean,
yes, thank you. Thank you.
No, I mean, can you imagine a band with Stephen King, Dave Barry, and Stephen Wright in it? I mean, you know. Anyway.
But the in-between talking between songs would be probably better than that.
Yeah.
Not that I've never heard them play. I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying all those minds on the planet.
It'd be a pleasure to hear you tuning and killing time.
Tuning.
By the way, the songs on your website, are they available for sale? Is that from a CD or just...
No, I just put them on. When I made my website, I thought, I'm going to put things on there that people don't know that I do. So I have like paintings on there. There's like 16 paintings. And I just thought I'd put some songs on just because people don't know I do that. My friend Mark is amazing because he can play so many different instruments. And he has a little, you know, with a computer, he has a little studio in his house. So I make these... songs with three or four chords, and then he adds everything else, and it sounds like a band. You know what that's like when they do that, and it's such a rush. Creativeness things I do, that's the funnest thing I do.
Well, the reason I asked you, by the way, whether you did music before comedy, is most people who were dedicated their life, they thought, to music like I did before I got into something else, always have that regret. that they didn't follow through on music, you know, or make a big, bigger part of their life. But you're a wealthy man. Now you can do it in your spare time, right?
Yeah, I can do it.
By the way, that song, You Are Gone, did you write that with somebody in mind?
No, you know, it's interesting. It sounds like it, but it wasn't about anything or anyone.
Just like your
joke. I once said that to a person, and they said that you just ruined the song for me.
Oh, really? Well, you know what you ought to tell them next time? Tell them it's about the person they're thinking about. All right, Stephen Wright has been our guest tonight, and we want to really thank you. I'll plug again, When the Leaves Blow Away is his special. His website, once again, is what?
StephenWright.com.
That's spelled W-R-I-G-H-T, by the way, in case you have not been a Stephen Wright fan already. And listen to the music. I think it's great. I hope you do more.
That.
And
yeah,
you blow a mean harmonica. By the way, if you're a Robert Klein fan, do you remember the bit
with
the harmonica?
The leg, when his leg won't stop moving.
Well, yeah, I can't stop my leg. But I mean, at the end, he said a harmonica would be a great nurse's aid because the nurse could just put a harmonica in the patient's mouth and leave the room, and they could hear the breathing. like
That's
that. And
great.
He'd breathe in and out. And he says, and if they died, they'd go out with a crescendo. Anyway.
That's amazing.
He is a pretty amazing guy. So what's your plans in the future? You're going to do another movie because you love that Oscar buzz.
I want to try to do more film stuff, but also write more material and eventually go out on the road again. Just keep creating, you know. I like just making stuff up like a kid. It's like being a kid, like just playing around.
If you get a band together, please let me set it on bass one day, okay?
Absolutely.
All
that
right.
would be cool.
All right.
Sonny Fox, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Stephen Wright, thank you.
Stephen Wright, our guest this week on the Fox Cast. We hope you enjoyed it. Another one next week. We won't tell you who it is. We'd like to surprise you, but you're going to love it. And thanks for listening.